The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
It's tax deadline day, how much the average American pays, and what the IRS is saying on collections, and who they're collecting from. Apple employees in New Jersey vote to join the Communication Workers of America, and today on the show, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and later, the exploitation of gig workers in America. Welcome to the Monday, April 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Ed Hill Jr. And if that name sounds familiar, well, his dad, Ed Hill, was the president of the IBEW from 2001 to 2015. He passed away in 2018. Now, Ed serves as the Business Development District Rep, and his district is the 3rd District, which encompasses a big chunk of New York, New Jersey, and he'll talk more about that. But the big story is what we talked about on the show last Thursday with Gary LaBarbera. That show's archived on awfpodcast.com. Gary's the head of the building trades in New York City, and the announcement came out about 3 weeks ago about Empire Wind, and the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York announced the signing of a project labor agreement, a PLA, for the construction of the South Brooklyn Marine Terminal. Now, it's a first-of-its-kind PLA for Equinor, and the agreement will establish working standards, industry-leading safety practices, which is so important, and equity in the construction of the terminal. We're talking about 1,000 union construction jobs and apprenticeships in local New York communities, as well as thousands of indirect jobs in manufacturing, shipping, and logistics. Now, to be specific here, Empire Wind is located about 15 to 30 miles southeast of Long Island, spans about 80,000 acres, and water depths anywhere between 75 and 135 feet. The lease was acquired in 2017. Now, there's going to be two phases to this project, and Ed will talk in depth on these. Empire Wind 1 and Empire Wind 2. Which have the potential capacity of more than 2 gigawatts, which is enough to power about 1 million homes in New York. Now, Empire Wind 1 was selected as the provisional winner in New York's 4th offshore wind solicitation last month. Their website is empirewind.com. Now, Empire Wind is being developed by Equinor, which is a leading energy company with more than 20 years of experience with offshore wind and an already strong offshore wind portfolio with assets in key markets. We're talking the UK, Poland, Germany, and South Korea. So we're talking a very reputable company here that's going to create a whole lot of jobs and hopefully keep energy costs down. I mean, everybody's looking for ways to manufacture more energy, which there is a huge demand in America, and the IBEW has come to the table. There'll be a lot of jobs, and Ed'll break all that down as our first guest. Later in the show, Jonathan Rigsby will be joining us. He is an author, and this is an interesting bio. He's a crime intelligence analyst for the state of Florida, and does that during the day, and he's a rideshare driver by night. He lives in Tallahassee, Florida with his son, has a bachelor's degree in political science from Vanderbilt, and he wrote this book called Drive, and it's about the role of the gig economy, which he says is exploiting vulnerable people. The way that advertising is targeted, says Jonathan, is to recruit people in bad situations with big promises that don't pan out. Drivers are left in precarious situations because they are classified as independent contractors, which leaves them fragmented and unable to advocate for better working conditions and pay. And this has been a controversy that's been going on for years. He says by exploiting an information gap between what the company knows and what workers can see, the company squeezes drivers to work longer and longer hours. And the technology that's used allows them to keep the drivers away from the information that would let them make better decisions. So this all results in the hollowing out of the American economy. Middle-class jobs, says Jonathan, are increasingly being imperiled by the gig model. So we're going to get into all of that and more. You might want to check out that that book, Drive. That's the name of the book. And it's on Beacon Press. Jonathan will give us all the details on that later in the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Well, today is April 15th, the day your taxes, state and federal taxes, are due. And did you know that the average American taxpayer pays $16,615 in income taxes every year? But for some of the wealthiest Americans, that number is zero. Why? Because they're simply not paying up. IRS data requested and released by Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, the chair of the Senate Committee on Finance, shows that over 10,000 high earners making at least $200,000 a year owed at least $100,000 each in unfiled taxes going back to 2017. Nearly 1,000 taxpayers who make over $1 million a year did not file taxes multiple times from 2015 to 2020. This according to an IRS memo. Those taxpayers owe a total of $34 billion as of last May. Out of that high earner non-filer group, 58 of them earned at least $10 million and owed over $16.5 billion combined. Not million, billion. A paper from economists at the Department of Treasury, Harvard University, and the University of Sydney in Australia, altogether, they did some research on this, and they found that for every dollar spent auditing, the top 90th percentile of earners yielded up to $12 in revenue. That paper looked at IRS audits from 2010 and 2014 and found that a dollar spent on auditing the top 0.1% of earners would yield about $6.29. Well, why aren't they doing this? Well, auditing the ultra wealthy is more expensive and time consuming. And those audits have plunged in recent years. In 2012, 13.6% of Americans earning at least $10 million saw their individual income returns examined. By 2018, that number fell to 9.2%. It went from 13.6% to 9.2%. So there's a lot of money that should be collected and is not being collected. And they try to fix this too. Biden tried to fix this when he came out with the Inflation Reduction Act. And he got a lot of pushback, from the GOP. 104 employees of an Apple retail store in Short Hills, New Jersey, have filed their petition with the National Labor Relations Board to unionize with the Communication Workers of America. The New Jersey staff are the fifth U.S. Apple store to petition to unionize of the four prior unionization efforts, only two retail stores in Oklahoma City and Towson, Maryland, have successfully unionized, but both have yet to reach a collective bargaining agreement with Apple, which is no surprise. The New Jersey employees petition breaks a year-long slowdown in Apple store organizing amid Apple's history of intimidation, coercive interrogations, labor law violations, and other illegal union-busting tactics. And sadly, we talked about this many, many times with Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. They make all of those iPhones and iPads pretty much in China, where they're paying people God knows how much today. In Maine, the legislature has passed two compromise bills providing agriculture workers a minimum wage and the right to discuss wages and engage in other concerted activities. Legislation is titled LD 2273. It was proposed by Maine's Governor Janet Mills, establishing a minimum wage of at least $14.15 an hour, subject to annual cost of living increases, the same hourly minimum that other employees enjoy under the law in Maine. The bill also establishes record-keeping requirements for employers. The legislation narrowly passed the state's House with a vote of 72 to 70. Wow. The state Senate passed the bill 23 to 11. Now, the Maine legislature also passed an amended version of LD 525, granting agriculture workers the right to discuss wages, working conditions, and other matters related to their employment. The originally proposed version of the bill would have explicitly established agricultural workers' rights to organize. And one more here before we break. The Office of Management and Budget has concluded its review of a Department of Labor rule that would raise the exemption threshold for overtime eligibility under the Fair Labor Standards Act. While currently, salaried workers making roughly $35,568 or lower are owed overtime for any work above 40 hours per week, the new rule would raise that amount to $55,000 or higher. Any work above 40 hours would be paid time and a half, with exceptions for salaried workers on what they call a bona fide executive, administrative, or professional capacity. This rule, which would expand overtime protections to about 3 million workers, can now be published by the Department of Labor. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ed Hill Jr., on behalf of the IBEW, talking about wind power in New York City. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. By the way, Melissa Cropper will be joining us from the OFT tomorrow. Right now, let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show, Ed Hill Jr. Ed is the Business Development District Rep for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. IBEW.org is their website, and he handles the 3rd District. Where's the 3rd District? Well, we're talking New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, big territory there. And we're going to talk about the IBEW's Green Initiative. Last time we had Ed on the show, we were talking about solar, talking about training, organizing, because the economy is changing in many, many ways. And the IBEW is right in the middle of that change. And it's so funny. Ed, welcome back to the show. I have to tell you, we had a career fair here in northeastern Ohio a couple of weeks ago. We had almost 400 people. It's a record. It really is a record, which is good because there's a lot of work going on, especially in northeastern Ohio and central Ohio with that Intel plant. And Doreen Cannon, who organized it, she said, you know, for some reason, everybody wants to be an IBEW member. I thought you'd like to hear that.
Yeah, that's always nice to hear.
Yeah, yeah. We need them. We need them.
And, oh, yeah.
And you think about EV batteries, and now we're going to get into the wind situation here, which we covered extensively with Gary LaBarbera last week of the New York City Building Trades. He really got into it. And the main thing here, we got a PLO. We got a project labor agreement. But talk to me about this, about the IBEW's role in all this, because from what I understand, this is a long time coming, and I know NABTU has been pushing offshore wind. Ed, I'm going to let you pick it up from there, because there's a lot of background on this story. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for having me on again, Flash. I appreciate it. You know, as we talked about last time and everybody's familiar with, there's just a huge change in the energy transition here in the United States and really across the world. And offshore wind and onshore wind are going to play a vital piece in that change. Offshore wind in the United States, it's really just getting started. We have our first full utility scale wind, offshore wind project operational now off of Long Island called South Fork Wind, where the IBEW participated in its construction. And now there's about 16,000 megawatts of projects along the East Coast that are contracted for installation and production. So that's a lot of work, a lot of electrical work, obviously, when we bring the power from offshore, onshore, and then get it on a distribution and a transmission system here in the U.S. So it's an important piece to the puzzle, and we're happy to be a part of it.
Well, this deal with Equinor, maybe you can get into the specifics on it. It's a first of its kind PLA for the company. And Empire Wind, from what I've been gathering, well, they've been around for a bit. EmpireWind.com is a website. And to your point, they're located just southeast of Long Island, about 80,000 acres there. Maybe you can get into some of the specifics here on how much. Do we have a breakdown right now on IBEW jobs, or is it premature at this stage?
Well, we're just getting the handle on the offshore portion of the work. For this particular PLA that was signed, it's for the port in Brooklyn near New York City, which is wonderful for that city and that port area and that specific neighborhood, really. It's really hasn't been utilized as much as it could be, and this industry here is going to transform that area, as well as other areas there in and around the city, because there's so many projects coming. So that's one of the important parts of it. As far as the IBEW, we've been doing onshore transmission, distribution, substations, and all that kind of thing for many, many years. So once that power hits the shoreline, we pretty much have, it's a standard operations for us. Offshore, we're still, gaining experience offshore with the connection of the turbines and the substations and all the underground wiring that goes along with that, and the connections of those cables and things. We're putting together job statistics, both from the South Fork Wind Farm and also Vineyard Wind, which is underway up in Massachusetts. It's about 25% done, and that's going to help us understand the amount of jobs. But when we look at it, all the different components that need to be installed and the work that needs to be done from an electrical standpoint, it's going to be a fair amount of jobs offshore as well.
Nice thing about it, we're dealing with a company that's got some pretty good experience here. I was reading earlier that Empire Wind has markets in the UK, Poland, Germany, and South Korea. And they're looking at the United States as a growth market. And that sounds good right there. Dealing with a company, and you know this, Ed, it's important that you have responsible companies. And obviously, Empire Wind falls into that category then, right?
Yes, they've been good to work with. As you mentioned, this stuff has been under planning and permitting and things for years. I at first went to Virginia to talk with our local down there about offshore wind. I think it was in 2012. And we talked about the requirements for training at that time. But we didn't take a lot of steps because, there was some fits and starts and stops and things along the way. But Empire here is finally, they're starting construction onshore this year and offshore. Now it's going to take a couple, 3 years for, that full project to get constructed. They've been great to work with, and they have a community benefit fund that they've started. We're actually participating in it, really to reach out into the community and let folks know the types of jobs that are coming in offshore wind. And we're looking at the full scope of things, too, the whole supply chain, not just, of course, for us, it's electrical, right? But there's a lot of other ancillary jobs, other trade jobs, of course, huge opportunity for other trades. But of course, people need parts, and you need concrete, and you need rocks, and you need steel, and there's so much about it that's in play. It's really wonderful, actually.
Yeah, we're looking at 1,000 jobs with Equinor, and then you throw in indirect jobs. To your point, you got manufacturing, shipping, logistics, and I would say you could probably triple or quadruple that number when you throw in the supply chain there. So the other part you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned community benefits. That's really big in the trades, because we talked to Gary LaBarbera about this last week. The PLA, the Project Labor Agreement, promotes engagement with minority and women-owned businesses and service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. It also includes a local hire requirement that gives priority to union members who are Section 3 New York City Housing Authority residents, veterans, and those who live in the area they called Sunset Park. So this goes back to reaching into those parts of the community that have been neglected. They've been underserved. We're talking poverty in some cases, where they have an opportunity now, because of this project labor agreement and these community benefit agreements, to get out of that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
And it goes back to the old line I use so much on the show, Ed, you're probably familiar with it. It's a pathway to the middle class. And
absolutely.
I know NAMTU uses that. Don't you think, that's got to make you I mean, as someone that's involved in business development, it's got to make you feel pretty good. And isn't that kind of the mission of not just the IBEW, but all the trades today?
Well, it's straight from my heart to your mouth, Ed. You know, that is really the value that the trades brings to, you know, our communities. From the most granular perspective, and we have this huge infrastructure with NAB2 and all of the locals and all the trades in place in the U.S. to transform a workforce, to build a workforce that is necessary for this energy transition. And we're in the communities now, right? So, you know, there's not a lot to do just to get, other than to get people oriented to what the opportunity is and to get them in a pre-apprenticeship program as necessary to sharpen, you know, math skills and orient them to the types of work that they'd be doing, make sure that that fits for them as well. And off to the races we go.
Yeah. Really. I'm just wondering, too, and I don't know how close you are to those who are in charge of the apprenticeship programs, because like I mentioned, the career fair that we had in Northeastern Ohio a couple of weeks ago, it exploded, and a lot of people really, really interested in the IBEW as a career. But I'm just wondering, do you see a shift going around in America? Because the cost of college is astronomical, you know that. And then you got to deal with college debt. And I know a lot of the schools still want their kids to go to college because they get graded on that. Oh, yeah, we sent 98% of our kids to college. But don't you see a shift going on in America right now, especially with this energy transition? I mean, we talk about the Intel plant in Central Ohio. You got jobs there that do not require a college education, and that, well, first of all, in the trades for sure, but then again, in some of these other apprenticeship programs that they're going to be working in that Intel plant, they're going to be making well over six figures. Do you see that happening? What are you hearing from the IBEW on that?
Yeah, that's something we're very interested in, and we've talked about that for a long time. You know, we have Excel. I remember many years ago, we put an Excel worksheet that calculated just, you know, you could enter some figures on the cost of your college and then put in the apprenticeship rates starting in year one, and you can look out 30 years. It's simple calculations there, and of course, there are estimates, but yeah, you can really do pretty well in the trades. And then once you get into the trades, you have all kinds of opportunities. You can you know, be foreman and general foreman, superintendents. You can work for a contract. You can be a contractor. There's just a myriad of different opportunities that once you get into an apprenticeship and through that apprenticeship that you can go forward on. Yes, we need colleges. We need you know, many disciplines of worker that are not covered by the trades, of course. But you know, the growth right now in the trades, and as you mentioned, you know, I talk a lot about electrification because I'm kind of selfish there from the IBEW on it. But
sure.
There is, I mean, we still have the building infrastructure law out there that President Biden got passed a couple years back, and hey, that's hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars worth of work that's still being planned and constructed that is outside of the IDW, but includes a lot more in other types of jobs.
Yeah, for years to come, I might add.
Yeah,
all right,
absolutely.
Let's take a quick break here. Ed Hill Jr. joining us on our live line today. He is the district rep, and district is the third district, which encompasses Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Business Development District Rep for the IBEW. National website, IBEW.org. We'll talk a little bit more about their green initiative next. Later in the show, Jonathan Rigsby will be joining us, and he's going to talk about the gig economy. Now, this is an interesting story. He's a crime intelligence analyst for the state of Florida, but apparently that's not paying enough. So he is an Uber driver at night, and he'll talk about it right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's liuna.org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Are you looking for a new healthcare partner for your union members? Let Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield be your champion, making sure your members live their healthiest lives, now more than ever. It's important to have a partner you can trust, one who understands the unique challenges unions face. Anthem provides a variety of options to meet your organization's needs and helps you control costs without sacrificing quality of care. For more information, visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Ed Hill Jr. Ed is with the IBEW's 3rd District, that is Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Delaware, serving as Business Development District Rep. Last time you were on the show, Ed, back in November, we were talking about the IBEW's Green Initiative in the 3rd District, and a lot of that dealt with EV and battery storage. Maybe you can give us an update on this and also on solar, because again, we are in a transition phase in America. There is a thirst for energy, no matter how we get that energy. But you know, there's climate change to deal with, and the trades are understanding of that, so we want to move in that direction. So fill me in on this green initiative. What's it all about?
Well, you know, electrification is a means to reduce the, you know, carbon output of our power generation here in the U.S. And, you know, while that that alone is a huge undertaking, that means a lot of different things, too, for distribution and transmission of power, because it's going to be generated in different areas than what we have traditionally done. That means just a tremendous amount of opportunity and work for the IBEW members. You know, from both building new types of power generation facilities, but also moving that power from, you know, where that new facility is and balancing loads. And, you know, there's even a lot of initiatives, too, around virtual power plants, which is distributed power generation from electric vehicles and the demand regulation through software that balances the load. So things are just, it's an incredible time, really, to be in the electrical industry right now. Really is.
What about organizing? And that's a big thing. I mean, last year was a banner year for unions. Mm. We saw a lot of our brothers and sisters get decent, you know, double-digit raises. I'm just wondering, too, and again, the younger generation seems to be going to the trades, especially the IBEW, and also, you know, there's the non-union shops out there that are probably thinking, you know what, we can do better by going union. You see that happening?
I do. You know, with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, as it more commonly known, has really transformed our engagement with developers and contractors. And you know, we're going to be working a lot more with them because we have this infrastructure in place called apprenticeship, which is a requirement of the IRA in many pieces of its legislation for construction. Mm-hmm. And that really bodes well to bring people into, you know, into our fold. And it provides them with great opportunity for education, for experience, for jobs. And that's where we're at. And it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous opportunity for new people to get in the industry.
This situation with Equinor, which we talked about in the first segment, and Empire Wind, and that's a solid agreement there because you got a project labor agreement. When it comes to solar, though, I know we got to do a little catch up. There's a lot of non-union shops in there. Is I would assume that the IBEW is making that a top priority for this year and going forward.
Oh, absolutely, yes. All over the country, there's just a tremendous amount of projects in planning and a lot in construction. I think last year solar eclipsed any other new form of power generation in the U.S. installed. And going forward, from rooftop solar at residential you know, locations to these really large utility scale projects that they're planning in states, you know, all over the United States, which they've been building out in the Southwest for a number of years. But that industry is really growing, and we'll, you know, we've got a lot of opportunity there. And you know, we have the infrastructure in place, again, like we talked about earlier, to get these projects done in a timely manner and safely. And that's what's really appealing for the IBEW in particular.
Yeah, the first customer. 2 years of the Biden administration, we had some really good legislation that came out. Sadly, a lot of that has kind of slowed down, especially with the change in the House. But we have to point out, too, that, you know, good policy means good jobs. Let's be honest. And those jobs continue well into the future. And like that Intel plant, I keep bringing that up. We're talking. They're already talking about expanding the plant that's not even built yet. The crazy thing.
Yeah, the demand for data and technology is just going to grow and grow and grow. That's not something that people are going to give up and go backwards in their daily lives. They you know, there's a lot of artificial intelligence is supposed to drive the demand for data centers and computing power exponentially. And you know, that means that, again, that's a lot more work, that's a lot more jobs, that's a lot more installation of these things, which our trades participate in. It's very good.
There you go. Well, I'm going to let you get back to work here. Ed Hill Jr. joining us on our live line today. He is the Business Development District Rep, District 3, that is, for the IBEW, IBEW.org, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. So you stay in touch with us. Let us know, too, when we get a little closer to that Empire Wind deal, let us know as far as how many jobs, and obviously we'll do our best to promote those apprenticeship programs because that is the true pathway to the middle class, no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
Ed, take care. Stay safe, okay, brother?
You as well, Flash. Thanks very much.
IBEW.org is a website to go to. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Jonathan Rigsby, an author and a driver, Uber driver, is going to talk about the gig economy, and it's not too pretty. He'll explain it next right here on the show. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. ulagency.org is their website. Let's go to the state of Florida right now. Joining us on line number two is Jonathan Rigsby. Jonathan, well, he's got an interesting story to tell, and he's going to tell it right here on America's Workforce. First, he's a crime intelligence analyst for the state of Florida. He does that during the day, and he is a rideshare driver by night. And he's got an interesting background. He's got a bachelor's degree in political science from Vanderbilt, master's in Middle Eastern studies from the University of Chicago. I'm sure we could do a whole show on what's going on in the Middle East, but we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the exploitation of very vulnerable people in America who are either an Uber or Lyft driver. Now, Jonathan, you work for both Uber and Lyft, but before we get into that, talk to me a bit about your job, crime intelligence analyst for the state of Florida. Maybe you can be specific, and how did you get involved in this line of work? Go ahead.
It's a bit of an odd story, Ed. Thank you for having me on. It's really an honor. So the way I started out is my first job that I got after I moved to Tallahassee was actually with the state of Florida's child welfare agency, the Department of Children and Families. And in that job, what I was doing was anytime a child in foster care went missing, there was somebody who was assigned to read police reports and try to coordinate kind of the statewide response to make sure that those kids were reported missing and that somebody was actually looking for them. And after I did that for about 3 years, that job was actually located in the headquarters of the state police. And so after 3 years, word started to get around that this funny guy from DCF, as they call it in Florida, down the hall, did you know that funny guy down there speaks Arabic? And wow, he does a great job with the missing kids stuff. And they came to me one day and they said, we've got an opening in the counterterrorism program. Would you be interested? And I said, absolutely. And so I went over to counterterrorism for 3 years, where I did profiles on people that are on the terrorism watch list, responded to some major incidents over there. I don't know how familiar your audience is with the Pulse nightclub shooting, where a gentleman walked into a LGBT nightclub in Orlando and shot up the place, but I was one of the people who responded to that. I got a call in the middle of the night from my boss who said, something happened in Orlando. I need you to come into the office immediately. I can't say anything else. So I was one of the first people who responded to that. And after a couple of years in counterterrorism, I get into this a little bit in the book, but I moved over back towards missing persons, where I do what's called unidentified deceased, which is when someone is dead and we don't know who they are. There's just a body and they can't figure it out. I'm part of a program that goes and tries to help medical examiners and local police and coroners to try to figure out who was that person, because if you can figure out who they were, it at least gives you a starting point for the investigation.
Whoa, you've got an interesting background here. My question to you, you do this during the day and then you drive at night. Why is that? Are you not getting enough money? You just want a different view of Americana today? And I'm sure you get that view, especially when you're shuttling people around. But tell me that part, Jonathan.
So back in 2016, when I started this, I went through a pretty bruising divorce. And as I went through the divorce, my then wife and I had purchased a house about a year prior to that. And there came a point during the divorce where we looked at each other and said, if we sell this house, we're going to lose absolutely everything that we put into it, and we're just going to take a total bath. And our son, who we picked this neighborhood for, who we both care about, even if we don't want to be with each other anymore, is not going to grow up in the sort of environment or neighborhood that we want for him. So we need to keep this house. And I said, we're going to keep this house. I'm going to make you a promise right here. You're never going to have to leave this house. He's never going to have to leave this house until he's grown. And I made that promise and I meant it. And so I went out, I picked up a second job and I started driving. At first I was working at a local mall for GameStop of all companies. But the hours just weren't there and I needed a little bit more money. So I picked up rideshare driving as a way to sort of fill in the gaps.
Okay, so that was 8 years ago, and you're still doing the rideshare thing today? Is that right?
I am. Back when I started, I used to drive nearly every night. There were some periods in my life where I was driving 7 days a week. I would work for the state of Florida during the day, and then I would get off of work, go change clothes in the bathroom, get in my car, and just drive until the sun went down, usually till 10:30 or 11 at night. And then nowadays I'm still doing it. I go out on Fridays because that's the most profitable time to be out. We've got a university here in Tallahassee. It's Florida State University. Go Seminoles. And those kids are my primary market. So they are the best thing that I can have because I have an audience of people who are young, generally kind of intoxicated, and don't have their cars with them, but still want to go places. So they're my best friends.
I'm sure they are. So in your book, Drive, you talk about the role of the gig economy, and we have talked about it many, many times here on America's Workforce, and I know they've been trying to organize. They've misclassified people that are vulnerable. So you are one of those people. Talk to me about that. How are you being exploited, Jonathan?
Absolutely. So the exploitation that rideshare drivers deal with comes in a couple of different ways. And the first thing I would talk about is, like you said, it's the classification, because you're called an independent contractor when you're working for Uber or Lyft. I've actually done both. I've actually worked for Uber and Lyft at the same time, you know, just whichever one dings first, and then you cancel the other ride and you go get them. But when you're working on that platform, you're called an independent contractor. And what that means in their terms is that you're presented with rides, you can take them or leave them, and that's it. Well, being an independent contractor for real means you should be able to exercise some level of control over your work. You should be able to look at your prices. You should be able to look at your circumstances. You should be able to look at your work area or where you want to work or where you don't. And Uber and Lyft drivers, rideshare people, do not have any of those options. You're presented with a ride, you can take it or leave it. And if you choose not to pick up two rides in a row that are presented to you, you get this funny little warning on your app that says, hey, are you still there? Are you sure you want to be working? And if you say yes, it says okay, and it keeps you online. But if you don't take that third ride, it doesn't just sign you off. It logs you all the way out of the system. And you have to go in, log back in on the website, do a two-factor verification, and then you can get back online and start seeing whether you get presented with a ride you'd actually want to take. And that gets into you have very little control over what you're doing and where you're going, and you're encouraged by the system to take everything that's put in front of you, whether it's profitable or not. So that gets into the classification system in that you exercise very, very little control. Now, the pay is the other part of it. And the pay, you know, when most people are presented with in their app with the cost of a ride, they see the cost of the ride and they think, oh, well, these guys are probably taking home at least half of that most of the time. And I would tell you that a lot of the time that's incorrect. I've gotten into a car on a busy night and picked someone up, and then they say, God, the prices are outrageous tonight. You guys must be making bank. And I'll look down at my app, and Uber calls this surge. Lyft calls it prime time. Every platform has a different term for it. They have these bonus rates that you'll earn during busy times. And on my app, I won't see a surge. I'll see that I might get paid $6 or $7 for this ride. And even the ability to see what you're earning is something that was hidden from us for a long time. You wouldn't know how much you were going to earn on a ride until it was over. But you'll ask someone, how much did you pay for this ride? And they'll say, oh, you know, 26, 27, I think it said. Well, if you're taking home six and you're doing all the work, what exactly is Uber doing on this side of the equation besides skimming off of all of your work?
Right.
And it got so bad at one point, there was a study that looked at drivers in New York City. And this is back before they passed their rideshare ordinance. So keep in mind that that's part of it. They did a study on the people that were driving in New York City, and they found that 9 out of 10 of them were immigrants. So they were people that were new to America who had been targeted for this platform to be recruited into it with all of these promises that they would make big money doing it. And they found that for most of them, if there was an ordinance that would have given them just $15 an hour, 9 out of 10 of them, I'm sorry, 85% of them would have seen their wages go up at $15 an hour. So we're talking about a program and companies that are targeting people who are really vulnerable, who really have to make it work, and they're paying them wages that don't let them get by. So that any increase in the wages would improve earnings for probably, you know, 9 out of 10 people that are doing this.
So, Jonathan, you've been doing this for 8 years now, and have you figured out what you're making per hour? You mentioned the $6 out of the 27, and I don't know how long it takes you to get that amount of money, but have you done any calculations on that?
So, like I said, I'm an analytical guy, so I can't help but not look at this kind of stuff. So I actually, there's an anecdote in the book where I'm sitting at work one day, and I actually pull up all of my stuff, and I open a spreadsheet, and I look at it while I'm between tasks at work, and I realize as I figure it out that once you take out what I'm paying for gas and all the extra maintenance on the car, because, boy, you're going to get an oil change, it feels like you blink, and it's time for another oil change.
I'll bet, yeah.
What I noticed is that I was getting, when the students were here, probably about, you know, $12 to $15 an hour, and then take out my gas and expenses. When the students are gone during the summer, life gets a little harder, and I make maybe $8 to $10 an hour minus expenses. So we're not talking about great money by any means, and you need to keep that in mind whenever you hit the app and you see the price come up, is your driver is definitely not getting that. Now, drivers in other markets report that they do better. You know, some of these guys are reporting they can get $15, $18 an hour. But the thing is the app will constantly ping you with these reminders that say, hey, do you want to get online and drive right now? Because drivers in your area are making big money. They're getting 28, 30, 35. I've been told all kinds of things that I know from 8 years of experience just aren't true. But you're constantly being barraged with messages by the company that say, hey, if you want to get online and drive from 9 p.m. at night till 4 in the morning, you'll make $35 an hour. Well, yeah, if you want to work the graveyard shift and work yourself to death on a Friday night, maybe for a short window, you can make that money when, you know, right when the bars close. But you're not right. going to make that per hour. It's a lie that gets told to people about the earnings. And I've seen it with my own eyes in the money that I make, and studies have shown it that way for drivers who are working longer hours, who are doing it full time, that the words that are being put out by the company about the money that you'll earn are just not true.
Well, Jonathan, that's why we have you on the show, because like I mentioned at the top of the interview, we talk about this a lot. We talk about worker misclassification, independent contracting, and this is a prime example of how so many people, like yourself, are being taken advantage of. It's all contained in the book Drive. I take it the book is doing well then, Jonathan?
I'm really looking forward to the release, and I think it's going to do very well. I've met a lot of people who, as soon as I told them what it was about, you know, everyone who sits in the back seat of a rideshare wants to know what the driver thinking.
Jonathan Rigsby, author of the book Drive. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Ohio Federation of Teachers and Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield on Taft-Hartley funds. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.